When you don't know if you're cheering for a soccer club or an international soccer player laundering ring, it's That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Oh, well, hello. It was so dark right off the bat. Where do we go from there?
Well, I mean, like, it's not trafficking, it's laundering. They're just being laundered.
Who knows where you'll end up?
Yeah, I mean, so you have you've just returned to the land, not just North America, but also the land of the living.
More importantly, I've returned to the land of the living. God, I had some horrendous illness in the last few days, but yeah, I was in Cuba for a week. Interestingly, was able to watch a lot of soccer because Cuban television is all satellite, and so they'll just beam in whatever they can sort of pick up. And so I watched Finnish league, I watched Dutch league, I watched German league, I watched some U.S. men's soccer, I watched some U.S. women's soccer. It was great. A ton of soccer down there.
What was your favorite soccer watching experience? What was the best one you had?
I think it was actually the Copa del Rey upset with, I forget the team that beat Real Madrid, but that is always, always a delight. And then Atletico lost as well, which was great. I love big clubs that tumble. And, I gotta say the U.S. women's, because there's a lot of, younger players in the squad that I hadn't heard of or seen before. And, I mean, sure, I know where my allegiances lie in terms of, women's national teams, but you know, there's talent. I think North American soccer in general needs a higher profile, especially women's soccer, so it was good to see some new faces and some pretty impressive players too.
Yeah, it is definitely interesting to see how things evolve, especially with the World Cup coming next year. The the FIFA under 20 women's World Cup is coming later this year. Unfortunately, Canada will not take part after losing in the third place game to Haiti in the CONCACAF tournament, which was very unfortunate on the weekend.
Yeah.
It was Leganés who beat Real Madrid. Good work. Good work to them.
Love the Giant Slayers. I'm all about it. I can very quickly become an impassioned supporter of a club I've never heard of if they're playing a team I hate.
Well,
I don't even hate Atletico. I just, you know, I know that when you see teams that spend that much money, it always feels good to kind of watch them tumble. And I got to see my old buddy Fernando Torres. I haven't seen him since I played FIFA 2009.
That is pretty good. While you were out,
you made it sound like I ran to the store for some milk.
While you were out, there was a significant amount of activity in North America.
There sure was.
Soccer. The draft happened.
The draft happened.
Which is interesting, because
You have a draft rant. I feel a draft. You have a draft.
The draft rant is coming, and that is, wow, teams don't care about the draft. and probably for good reason. And to a certain extent, like, you've got to ask whether or not the draft in its current form is necessary, because the top 10 picks, like, you go into a draft like this where you're only really drawing off of the American college system. And you say, well, it's only the top end of this draft that is really going to be the most important. And in that top end of the draft, like 5 of the top 10 picks were traded.
Yeah.
Teams are going into this. Like everybody is warning, oh, well, you've got to have a high pick for it to even count. And teams are looking at their high pick and thinking, I would rather have Gam.
Yeah. I'd rather give me the money.
With trades for the number 3 pick went for 100,000 general allocation money and 100,000 targeted allocation money. The fourth pick went for 200,000 gam. The fifth pick went for 75 gam and 100 tam, and Matt Lampson.
Sorry, I don't need to. I like Matt Lampson a lot as a player. It's just funny to. What do we got? We got 75 tam. We got 100 gam. We've got a lovely dish set. Oh, and Matt Lampson as well. Matt, come here. What? Matt, you're going away.
At the time of the draft, it was.
But that's almost kind of how it works.
It was listed as a player to be announced. In my understanding that I got from just reading stuff was, I think I read that they needed to find the player to let them know you were the dish set that we threw into this trade.
Now that's so MLS.
By the way,
we need to find him. Wait. Don, hold on a second. We got to call a guy. Hey, Matt.
We don't want...
What are you doing right now?
Matt Lampson's...
By the way...
Matt Lampson's watching this on YouTube, and we really don't want this to be how he finds out.
Jesus. Oh, my God.
So, yeah, it's just weird. In the third and fourth rounds, there were a lot of passes.
Yeah.
Which makes me think that you might just want to not. they do the fourth and fifth rounds later anyways, and I just wonder what the logic is in terms of making picks at all at that point. You know? Let players just sign people. Well, let teams just sign people.
I see what you're saying, and to some degree I do agree. I think it's a bit of a farce. It's clearly one of those holdovers from the MLS days where there just wasn't anything interesting to talk about. And so to generate any sort of interest and capitalize on an American sort of football and basketball college system to have this draft thing, a language that sports fans could understand in America. Not really understanding that football fans or soccer fans in America don't really give a shit about basketball and football, mm-hmm. and you could just treat them like a different entity, which isn't to say there's no crossover. Anyway, I do agree to some sense it seems like it's a little bit irrelevant, but then, and maybe it's just good social media, but when I saw the video that Real Salt Lake released, and they showed the work that Petke and crew put in. And then I think Columbus just released one as well. And you see the players the coaching staff at the combine and them doing their homework and them actually selecting players. I still think that it's... Some teams are seeing value in it and seeing a possibility of picking up players for good value. But I agree that, if most of your top 10 picks are just getting traded away, and it's sort of like, on the clock is LA Galaxy, but they've traded to Columbus, who's traded to LAFC, who's just purchased a timeshare in Miami, maybe Miami, and then it's just bouncing around and you're not sure about what's even happening. Like, it's got to be a more streamlined thing, I think, rather than this sort of musical chairs of players. Yeah. But that being said, we know that there's teams that have picked up really good, not just good value players, but players that do see minutes. I think it's, in some ways, it's kind of on the club to decide what their value is. And there's a lot of clubs that are just looking any way, anyhow, to get some of that money because they've got a particular player in mind that they want to bring in, but because of the salary cap, they need that extra $75,000 and it's worth it for them to trade it away. I think you can still have the draft. I just don't get that you need as much resources and as much put into it to make it this big event when it does sort of become this, like, slow, drawn-out fart.
True. I mean, there are so many drafts. There's in MLS already that it's like even the main one is.
Yeah, the re-entry draft. And I'd love a re-entry draft video where it's just these players sort of mid-career hanging out at home waiting for a phone call. Being like, all right, by the way,
The
You're going to Columbus.
There was an amazing part of the video, and it was Alexi Lawless and I think two other players that I can't recall. And the interviewer is about to ask them what the mentality of a player waiting to be drafted is, and has this moment of fear, understanding, immediately before asking the question, where they realize, so none of you were drafted, so I know you don't exactly have this experience, but from the player's experience, what's it like to be waiting to be drafted?
Yeah, well, and I do feel bad, too, for the kids that come in, because they're excited. This is a major opportunity for them and a big profile thing for them. But it is this is handled so poorly that it does kind of seem lackluster. But you see it on the kids' faces when they're drafted to a team. This is a major, major opportunity. Mm-hmm. And they're looking to challenge for minutes on the first team. And the thing that I liked about the Real Salt Lake video is they actually sort of talk about that. I mean, they don't mention players' names specifically, but they're like, well, are we bringing this guy in to actually play? Because we drafted this guy to play.
Mm.
But are we going to bring in this other guy who's not going to ever see minutes, or do we want to trade that pick?
That makes sense.
And I liked that there is a little bit more reality to that, but also a team that took it seriously enough to go, look, if we're going to spend the time and the money to bring in a player, we want we're expecting that they're going to be pushing for first team minutes, not somebody that's just immediately going to go down to the USL. Or maybe they are, but acknowledge that.
Yeah. I think that when you talk about the value of what the club's approach is, you can see that it's some of the closest. I think that Vancouver was really looking at just taking defenders with the idea that defenders, this is a source for defenders for us. We've drafted Tim Parker, and Tim Parker was a success. We've drafted defenders. We can get defenders here. We'll get players we need elsewhere from other places. In terms of not drafting people that you don't want, well, Montreal had 6 picks through 4 rounds of the draft and picked Ken Krolicki from Michigan State in round 3 only. Passed on 2 draft picks and traded 3 draft picks.
But as you mentioned, though, because it's based on just the American college system, Montreal also has a great academy system.
That's right.
And so that they've established very quickly. And so for them, I actually see that as kind of a pragmatic move, because we know they're a team that bring up a lot of young players.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't need to go to the draft to find them.
This is not to say that nothing happened at the draft, because the Chicago Fire traded David Akam to the Philadelphia Union basically just for Gammon Tam.
Yeah, that was bizarre to me. I mean, I know that Akam kind of became a bit surplus at Chicago Fire, sort of falling into the shadow of Nikolic a little bit. But that was I was sort of surprised by that move. I sort of thought he was worth a bit more. I'm not sure I would have made the same decision, but I guess they're looking to, maybe they just needed to line the coffers a little bit for old Schweinsteiger.
You whenever you see a team, usually Gammon Tam are dealt in such smaller quantities than this. So you think, oh well, they must have somebody they know they want to get in. But sometimes it's really hard to see the through line from point A to point B on a GAM transaction. This is $1.2 million in allocation money, $300 in GAM, and $900 in TAM.
It's a tidy bit of business.
Yes, with it, just because it's a complex process, so it bears repeating. General allocation money buys down any player against the impact on the salary cap, and targeted allocation money allows you to sign a player that you were going to sign as a designated player instead as a normal player, but still be able to pay them over the individual limit.
Well, that's simple.
Does that sound right to you?
Oh God, I don't know. I mean, I. What was the first one? Tam or Gam?
Gam is the salary cap. Tam is for DPs.
Gam is a little bit easier. So essentially, if you have a player making, as I understand it, say you have a player making 300,000, you could, using Gam, and say that's going against your salary cap, and let's say it's putting you 100 grand over the salary cap. With Gam, if you had 100 grand, say through a draft pick, you could buy down that salary, and you'd be okay. Then you could say, technically on paper, they're only making 200,000 because I got 100 grand again. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right. Yes.
Tam, I think you have to go to a lonely mountain on the Super Blood Moon, light some candles, invite your closest spiritual guides. I think you have to throw some dust or something into a large fire, wait for the flames to reach maximum height, and then recite the ancient tomes, and plays out from there.
That sounds about right to me.
Okay, good. I mean, no, I'm just reading off the MLS.
Right, card, so. Right. It's right over there. The with the Kyle Larin saga sewn up.
Yeah.
He, after sort of rogue, going rogue to Besiktas, he has finally sealed that deal to make that official. After kind of Orlando has said, you better show up to training, and he showed up to training in Turkey. So not the right one.
You didn't say which country.
The deal's done. They announced it on Tuesday. I don't know what they said. For an undisclosed fee, which is a hard
to Yeah, say. I was going to ask you if we've been able to find out how much. How much do you think?
Well, I don't know. I understand, and here's another sort of moving piece involving Canadian or Canadian teams or their adjacents. I understand that there was a rule where teams did not get 100% of the transfer fee, like it was something like 40%. Key point was, because in typical, as you always love to hear that the MLS has waived a rule right before something important happens with it, Montreal Impact sold Balu Tabla to Barcelona B.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently they will receive 100% of that transfer fee.
Oh, okay. So who would get 100% of Kyle Larin's transfer
fee? I would assume that would be Orlando. Because that transfer occurred after Tablas, which is what I heard was like in the rule change that I heard about on Twitter. Happened before that.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see.
So I guess there was a rule change. There was a rule change that Montreal was able to get the big benefit of in that. But Orlando's response to losing Larin was to end the merry-go-round for Justin Merrim and acquire him from Columbus Crew again for 1.5 million dollars in allocation money. Or wait, no, 1.05.
Yeah, good business for them. Just to jump back to the Kyle Larin thing. I mean, I think, you know, from an Orlando point of view, good riddance. I mean, if a player doesn't want to be there, I hope Orlando was able to drag their heels a bit and squeeze some money out of Besiktas. I figure it can't be that much, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe 4 or 5 million. I think as Canadian soccer fans want to rate Kyle Larin as worth a ton of money, but I'm not sure a European club is necessarily going to agree.
Let's put a Hale and Hardy so 750,000. That's my prediction.
Was 750,000?
Yes.
Hey, you might be right. I mean, it's entirely possible they only got a million or so. I mean, he's less productive than Camilo, and I think he's got The Whitecaps only got a million for him, didn't they?
I don't remember.
It wasn't much more than that, I don't think.
Because you're not in a strong bargaining position. A, you're trying to move Kyle Aaron. B, the player has just said, I'm going to besiege.
Yeah, he's got a different postal code at that point.
He's dialed the phone and he said, Jason, I'm going to besiege.
Coming to besiege. once those holy words have been said, same mountaintop you have to say that from there.
Yeah.
But on the Justin Merrim side, a tidy bit of business for Orlando, and a team that was the laughingstock of the league and just couldn't string anything together from last season, I think is well primed coming into this season. I think they've done probably some of the best moves in the offseason, and ones that make a bit of sense for their system, not just... It's nice to see them move out of the star power off-season signings and the big names and look for players that are actually going to contribute something. I mean, Justin Merrim isn't a spring chicken, but you could say he's in the prime of his career. We know he's a producer.
Uh-huh.
They've got Dom Dwyer, who's off-season with them and is probably raring to go. Mm. They're free of Kyle Larin, who, even when he was playing, didn't seem to be able to... couldn't figure out whether he wanted to be there.
And of Kaká. And Kaká had those same problems.
Yeah, and Kaká as well. So I think they've brought in some players that in a good price point who are going to be able to deliver, I think, a little bit more consistency. And Lord knows that's what Orlando needs. So well done to them. I think they've had a fantastic offseason.
Do you think part of the reason why you rarely see in the English Premier League straight swaps, I think, is because nobody likes to see a player, I guess, come back to haunt them. And also nobody likes the risk of trading a good player for a player who is unproven in their system, might end up to be completely worthless in the end. For whatever reason, player for player is not common in England. And the first two real trades, well, not I guess that's not strictly true, but we've had recently in these last 2 weeks two pretty significant movable pieces in the MLS trade picture move for larger amounts of TAM than I've ever seen.
Yeah,
or for allocation.
I agree. I'm kind of shocked at some of the figures that have been thrown around and the amount of cash that teams have. But that being said, teams also have more of it now. So,
and
I think they're...
Sorry, yes.
And what?
And unlike the money that that Orlando will get for Laird and that Montreal will get for Tabla, can't stress this enough, not real money.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You're just spending invisible money. So, and that's the thing is, after the Kyle Larin thing, I mean, I know I've seen a few fans on Twitter and stuff, and people are upset, and, you know, we've lost a Canadian overseas, and it's too bad he's leaving MLS, but I think, you know, for Orlando, and I want to like Kyle Larin, I really do, but the guy was shit last year, and... he has a crappy attitude. So, you know, if they got $750,000 for them and they were able to put that towards purchasing Justin Merrim, that's a better player. It's going to do better for your team. No, he's not going to score the same amount of goals because he's not in the same position, but that's what you need to be a successful team in MLS. Mm-hmm. You don't need the bratty kid who's going to go... who costs you a lot against your salary cap and can't decide if they want to perform or not. And, you know, for Besiktas, hopefully it's a... we talked a little bit about this already. Hopefully it's an atmosphere that will help him develop as a player when he realizes he's not the head honcho anymore. In fact, he's just some little runt who's going to have to compete for minutes. But for Orlando, I say they'd be laughing. I mean, it's an unfortunate situation to have to go through, and I'm sure they didn't get the figure that they would want for him. But... I would just sort of dust my hands off and move on, and I think that's what they've done.
That makes sense. We talked before about how Laren is a player with a lot of years yet to go, and hopefully will find sort of a second wind in an environment where Atiba Hutchinson has thrived. The sort of more concern for Canada, I think, is the Ballard Tabla situation, because Tabla, who if I recall is 18. Is not cap tied and is qualified to appear for Canada or the Ivory Coast. I've seen the suggestion made on Twitter that, you know, not having him play in Canada is not going to be helpful to efforts to hope he sticks around in the program. Especially as it undergoes some organizational challenges.
No, absolutely. I was quite surprised at how little impact, pun unintended, that trade had, because that was a huge deal, and everyone was sort of like, meh, it's only Barcelona B. And you're like, there's a significant amount of money for a very promising Canadian player going to, sure, the B team of the largest, arguably biggest club on the planet, with the best players. It's certainly not nothing.
Yeah.
The trade is certainly noteworthy. I was kind of shocked that people weren't a little bit more like, oh, like a Canadian academy product at the age of 18 is now in the Barcelona system. That does not happen every day.
Do you think that it's like a part of the, like, some of the French language thing? Like, do you think that Montreal is just too far out of the system? Because I think, when I think of the little wave that the, that Davies getting invited to that Man U youth camp got.
That got more attention.
That got more attention, and he didn't even go.
Alfonso Davies not going anywhere got more attention than Tabla going to Barcelona.
Yeah.
For a crap ton of money as well. Like, this is not like, oh, he was just invited or he's loaned out. This is a significant... What was the final figure?
I'm not sure off the top of my head. I think that...
I mean, it's not like... it's not some, like, entirely... It's not an amazing son. To the Google!
Whoa! I thought it was like, the buyout clause is 25 million euros out of the first 3 years of the deal. But I'm not sure if that's the... The transfer fee itself was not disclosed.
Hold on, I'm going to my secret way of finding it. It's not that secret.
I think while you're there, I'll just say that I think that this is the... We were talking about it being a little too early for Davies to go to... Alfonso Davies to go to the Manchester United camp previously. And I think that it's it's worth noting, even as exciting as Davies is, that... this shows how Tabla is like just a couple of years ahead of him in the process, because like this is where Davies is going to get to soon, but it doesn't necessarily have to be right now.
No, and it's certainly where he could put himself. And Tabla's also done all the right things, right? He's put his head down and just worked for it and kind of quietly gone about it, but certainly made a big splash. The valuation I'm getting for him that was updated on the 25th is £450. Sorry, £450,000. £450. Mm. That's a good tidy bit of business. Because I thought I saw somewhere the rumor was like close to $900,000 transfer fee.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. So that would check out. We're close to that. I mean. Which it's not an earth-shattering sum of money, but for an 18-year-old academy product, that's probably more than, as you said, Orlando got for Kyle Laren. So
one thing I was going to look at was I was looking for and didn't see was whether or not there's a sell-on clause, because occasionally the selling team. In a situation like this, might insert a little clause where the next time the player gets sold, the originated club gets a little cut.
Yeah, I don't know how much that transfers from MLS to other leagues, but I would imagine that's part of it. I mean, I don't believe that Montreal would have given him away even for a relatively large sum of money without something in that. I guess it happens in Europe too, but I haven't seen that either.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I wanted to talk about that kind of relates back to the draft, at least thematically,
mm-hmm.
is young Jack Harrison moving on from Manchester City.
Right!
Wrong city. Moving on from New York
City
to Manchester City to Middlesbrough almost instantaneously.
Well, technically he moved on from Manchester City minutes after arriving in Manchester City. He arrived at the Manchester City Football Club airport and then immediately was moved along. That's right. That was a strange set of moves, in which Mix Discarud, who is a Canadian or was a U.S. men's national team player, maybe still is. I'm not sure, but basically fell out of favor at New York City. They bought out his deal, but he was still under contract despite the fact that they bought out his deal, probably because MLS rules are weird. and so I guess they released him, and then Man City signed him to work at their training center and not train with the first team.
Yeah.
Before arriving in MLS, he had mostly done like Swedish First League stuff, so I understand that he doesn't necessarily slot into the Premier League leading team. But that one was strange.
And also, it's a 3-year contract as well. It's not. It's a very weird thing.
People are. I had seen some speculation that maybe this is a way that a team may be interested in selling a player without having to give the cut of the transfer fee, except I guess that's not a thing, or except in the other news story would indicate that's not a thing anymore. Or at least would be able to make a transfer without having to deal with MLS, which is possible. But at the same time,
I mean, who can blame them?
But at the same time, New York City also sent, also did that deal that you described, sending Harrison to Man City, and then having Man City load him right back away to Middlesbrough. What's up with that?
It's a bit of a shock move. I think Jack Harrison, his season spoke for itself, and his work at New York City has spoken for itself. He's a fantastic young player. Again, he's got things to learn, but there's so much talent there. Again, he just goes about his business and does the things he needs to do, and clearly has the focus and the drive to be an excellent player at a top level. At first I was quite surprised, not by the move to Man City, but by the Man City to Middlesbrough move. But then thinking about it, it's kind of like, well, where's he going to slot into Man City right now? I mean, they've basically won the title mid-season. The team is firing on all cylinders. There's already a ton of academy products and excellent, excellent players who played very few minutes for Man City. Why not be realistic and say, there's no way he's playing a minute for our club this season, but we want him get him minutes. We want him playing games. So let's have a loan lined up to make sure that he actually is getting minutes. It might seem unfair and like a bit of a downgrade, but from a coaching perspective, and indeed probably a player's perspective, you want them playing, and you don't make that kind of move. And you know, knowing that there's the Man City, New York City, FC, New York City connection, you don't move a player on without some sort of plan for them. Like, why would New York City give up one of their really young, promising players to sit on a bench for a season?
Yeah, that's true. It's just so strange to me because it's like. So I'm looking at his sort of backstory, and it's like he was in the Man U youth system. He moved to America to pursue educational opportunities, which is how he ended up playing for a New York City affiliate team. And he played for Wake Forest for a year, apparently. And then ended up going to MLS and did 2 years here. What was the experience he was looking to get before he went back to England? Because by all means, that seemed like a success. His time in America was a success from that standpoint.
No, I agree it was. I don't know. You have to ask the player. We'll see if we can get him, and if maybe there's a lonely Middlesbrough night, we can Skype him. But, you know, you never know, and I think that, you know, obviously as young players, there's a lot of pressure from agents, there's a lot of pressure from teams that maybe have designs and plans for you that maybe you don't even necessarily have or see for yourself. I agree. I thought he had a promising future in MLS. And again, I think it's easy on this side of the water to say, like, well, Middlesbrough, like, come on, they're not even in Premier League, like, who cares about them? But if we're going to talk about players like Larin and potentially Davies getting experience in Europe, the reality is playing in that English system is very different, and it might just be, it might even be something within New York City's long-term plans to at some point bring him back. But get him some really valuable experience playing in Europe.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's interesting.
It's odd, but...
Go on.
I was just... It is odd, but I see the... There's some method to the madness there.
Do you think... obviously, the mentality behind the mixed discourage situation is not immediately clear. But it is true that most MLS teams do not have the benefit of resolving their contract situations by flinging the player out to Manchester City and letting them figure it out.
Yeah, that's true.
Is it unfair? Because who knows whether or not they're trying to... Like, they're probably not with the idea in mind that maybe their rules have laxed on transfer fees. Maybe it's not as hard to... Maybe it's not trying to get away around the league office on trying to make international transfers happen. But that would seem pretty patently wrong in terms of something that you would let a team do if that was the case. So it becomes a benefit for the team that I don't know that I don't know how it affects, you know, competitive balance.
I'm not sure either. I can say this. I agree. There's something not fishy. I don't know if that's maybe overstepping and making it sound a little too nefarious, but there's something that does seem particularly peculiar about that trade. That you just sort of like, what? Like, why sign him to a 3-year deal, but he's not allowed to train with the first team? Like, it's bizarre. It's like bizarrely specific. They could have just shipped him over to the club and sorted it out there. But it's like in the actual transfer, they're like, oh, but he is not training with the first team.
And also, like, he could have gone to, like, you know, Melbourne or whatever if he was not, or any other MLS team. Like,
yeah.
Like, he could have found a home somewhere else, and I don't know what he wants. I don't know what they want for him. Also, it was announced by Umbro on their Instagram page.
I have no idea, man. It's MLS. What are you going to do? The one thing that I wanted to... I lost my train of thought. I was just clicking around to be like, has Toronto gotten anyone? And it's like, sort of. But basically, Toronto's been like, yeah, we're just going to do the same thing again with the same players, yeah? With the exception of Betashur is out.
Yes.
But that's it. That's basically been the major off-season move. And then I believe they just picked up a draft pick that they seem interested in. I mean, I think he was like the 20th pick or something, but anyway. But we have now officially a new MLS club in town, which I believe rounds up the league to 547 teams. And David Beckham, Sir David Beckham, got his wish, and Miami is coming to MLS. What are your thoughts?
I am a little put off by the kind of way that there were not that many details, because it's been known for the longest time that Miami was coming, because yeah. It was, even if it wasn't called Miami at the time, this is like, I talked a little bit about this before when we were talking about the dog and pony show that expansion cities are subjected to, but there's this huge song and dance, but this team is a contract perk for David Beckham from his way back from his first deal when he was signed in the league. So it had always been sort of out there throughout the course of the current expansion process that's happening, and it has not yet concluded because there's another spot still open. But I understand there was some owner, they had to find different and additional owners to supplant Beckham because some funders dropped out or whatever. So I understand they were waiting for that, but how they could not have any more details than they hoped to play in 2020 kind of escapes me. And does it make me feel any more, you know, convinced about the project, especially because their new choice for a stadium still has opposition like the previous choices for stadiums?
Yeah, it's very peculiar. I've been saying a lot about a lot of things. It's MLS. What are you gonna do? Join us on Monday. We've got an announcement in Miami. Like, what could it be? Is it that Cincinnati is becoming a team? Detroit, but we're going to announce it in Miami. Like, why do they even bother? You know, a special announcement in Miami on Monday. Like, is it that they're coming to MLS? Are you going to have any more details than they're coming to MLS? Oh, look, they're coming to MLS. Okay, great. Glad we turned up for that.
The special announcement is I looked at the Guardian video. David Beckham sort of, like, turning around, like, doing a little dance on the stage and being like, I've had a heck of a career.
You're not doing the David Beckham voice, though. Oh, no! I've had a heck of a career! And I'm bringing MLS to Miami! It's a bit sort of Mary Poppins. I love David Beckham's voice so much. Sounds like he's got a small alien trapped inside.
There's a lot... The stadium really is the biggest issue with Miami because they don't have one, because as much as this has been his market that he wants to put the team in, there has been opposition wherever he's tried to put one down. And there needs to be stability in the market because this is already a market that the MLS is pulled out of with the Miami Fusion from 98 to 2001. So I don't know. It's been the vaporware of MLS for so long that even the announcement is strange to me as to whether or not it's going to come by. But there's money behind it now, so that is definitely an important part of it.
Yeah, when we know that Don the Don, that's what it comes down to, right? It's just money talks, and as long as you've got deep pockets, then you've got to go ahead. Even if you don't have a place to play, as long as you got the cash.
That is true. This will.
I'm beginning to think there's only one key business market. And it's just a shitload of cash.
Is that the lesson?
I think it might be.
This is the we learn it over and over again every year. We try to Every year we embark on a new journey through the MLS season to learn the same lesson we should have known all along.
We sure do. I don't mean to be so cynical. Do you want to hear my David Beckham story?
Sure, do it.
So, of course, when I first became a Vancouver Whitecaps fan and following MLS, of course I wanted to go see a game where David Beckham is playing, and of course was going to cheer, like, rail against LA Galaxy as much as I possibly could and taunt David Beckham at any opportunity. And so the first time I saw him play, I forget what year it was probably like, I don't know, 2015 or something. And he'd gone down so easily, won a free kick, of course scored the free kick. As he was coming off at the end of the match, it was still in the era where, like, the second a whistle went, or even before, all the fans disappeared. So there weren't that many people around the player's exit tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And as David Beckham's coming off, you know, I might have had a couple of value-priced beverages at BC Place.
There are no value-priced beverages at BC Place.
There's already a hole in this story. I just screamed out, like, "Fuck you!" And, like, gave him the finger. And he wasn't looking, but he, like, looked up and, like, sort of cheekily smiled and just sort of, like, gave me a dull wave. and then I waved back.
Beckham.
And it's like that girl who gave Altidore the finger in Vancouver. It was sort of like that kind of moment of, like, I'm just saying fuck you because you scored against my team and it was kind of a cheap call, but I respect you. I was the worst kind of soccer fan in that moment, but I appreciated his good humor.
I was once...
He was just like, fuck you! He's like, oh, hello. Hi.
I once witnessed an interaction between a wrestling fan and British wrestler Zack Sabre Jr., where the fan apologized and said, you know that when you go out there, I'm going to boo the shit out of you. And he's like, absolutely, I wouldn't expect anything less.
Yeah, no, I think most players are pretty good humored about it. You have to be, right? Mm. Do we have anything else to talk about? Has anything else happened? We talked about Montreal. We talked about Toronto, where nothing has happened because they're the perfect team, apparently.
The perfect team.
The one thing I saw today that I wanted to talk about while we're talking about Miami is fucking Messi has to create a firestorm. And it's so funny that MLS fans can work themselves into such a tizzy over clearly what is just like a cheeky thing because he knows Beckham and they all know each other. And he's just like, you know, hey, who knows, in a few years, give me a call. And immediately everyone's like, oh my God, Messi to MLS, Messi to Miami. Could it happen? Could it be real? And it's like, what's the man's buyout clause right now? 750 million euros. Like, dude's not playing in MLS until 2040. Like...
Obviously, this will not happen. But let's just say this now. It's not in no world where his current sort of state of prime exists will he be playing for Miami. However,
no.
What I think the take out of it that is interesting is of sort of this broadly defined era of players from, like, you know, a couple World Cups that you would say could stretch kind of from the most recent one to, like, 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way that teams and team ownership works in Europe, that is kind of a fraternity that nobody actually owns teams. Like, Beckham is kind of the first player of that generation, unless I'm wrong.
Yep.
I can't think of anybody else that is the principal owner of a team somewhere. And that does matter.
Because it's a money-losing venture.
Possibly.
It's a terrible investment. It's a
terrible idea.
Be like Messi and just don't pay your taxes.
Oh, but see, that's the difference. Compared to Messi, he absolutely does it. Yes, he probably even has to pay more tax.
Yeah, well, truly. But I thought that was quite funny. But I will say this. If Messi ever plays for Miami, I will eat every last rubber pellet in BC Place. Scout's Honor.
Yeah. It's like gonna be like Robot Messi will play for Miami or like the he'll play in a testimonial. There'll be like a Miami versus somebody's testimonial, and they'll play Miami, and Miami will have Messi and
when Messi's old and fat and has his Maradona beard going. Oh my god! I guess he already has that a little bit. Then maybe we'll see him come out and do a few tricks on the field. But it was a nice video and it was fun. It was so funny that some people were actually taking it seriously. A lot of them obviously got that it wasn't, but some people are like, "Oh my god, is Messi gonna play in 2020 in Miami?" Like, yeah, and Neymar's gonna come to the Whitecaps next year. Like,
well, no. The internet loves sports is about dreaming. And
Coutinho to DC United.
Well, the number one pick of the MLS draft was Joel Moutinho.
True.
Just not that one. Just not the one you would think of. No. So I do think that is it. Teams are starting their preseason preparations. Toronto's been playing a bunch of U.S. college teams. The Whitecaps are heading to Hawaii. Head coach Carl Robinson joked is exactly like Wales last year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'm always excited. People laugh at me for this. I try to watch as many of the preseason matches as are streaming because it's a chance to see different tactics, different players. You get to see the rookies play. You get to see the trialists play. Mm-hmm. And often I think, I watched a lot of the ones in Wales last year, and I actually found it helpful. And I saw a lot of the things that went well for the Whitecaps. You sort of saw in preseason, and a lot of the things that didn't go so well, you saw there as well. Even though by the end of the season, it was sort of a very different team. But if you're an MLS fan, I highly encourage you, whatever team you follow, to if they're streaming preseason matches, you know, it's not always the highest quality, but it's worth it to get a look at players that you may not necessarily see until halfway through the season.
That makes sense. In the meantime, when they want to see your take on the preseason matches, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at ThatSoMLS on the Twitter. And where can we find you?
You can find me online at Team Bates on Twitter, www.team-bates.com. You can find this podcast at thatsomls.com and on iTunes, That's So MLS.
Subscribe to it. And then you can just hear it whenever it comes out, which I feel like we've been doing weekly. I think we missed a couple around the holidays, and then I had to piss off to the tropics for a bit. But we've been pretty consistent doing just about every week, I think.
Yeah, it's. I think it's been.
I don't know why I'm defending our.
It's
podcast,
been a. I think it's been a slightly relaxed schedule with the off season, but it's been.
Sure. Well, you and I have been busy with our preseason training camp.
Oh yeah, my player combine, my one person player combine, which was actually a lot of playing Persona 5, was intense. It was an intense combine.
Playing keep away with yourself is exhausting.
Just bouncing.
How did you?
Just bouncing the ball against the wall to myself, just over and over again, just being like, "Yes,
got it, still got it." He spins away. Oh yeah, my beep test was a nightmare. Alrighty, well, until next time, Andrew. I would say don't get sent. Oh, Christ, I messed that up. Oh, I was so ready this whole episode. Come to Pasictas.
All right. I'm coming to Pasictas.
Okay.